Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, April 5th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is You Heard It Here First. There's a wonderful subscriber we have from Texas who keeps pointing out the number of times he heard something or someone first on the Solari Report. This week he sent me a little note about Dr. Robert Lustig being on 60 Minutes and pointed out that Lustig, he'd first heard Lustig in September 2010. Ditto Jim Norman, great author of The Oil Card, hopefully will be back with us in May. He's been on coast to coast. His book is shot to the top of the charts. And John Rappaport, since being on in February, has gotten quite a run on Alex Jones, The Corbett Report, and others. I predict the same for our guest tonight, Joe Mysak. I've known Joe literally for decades. I haven't seen him since 1998. I just reminded him tonight. And Joe's certainly enjoyed plenty of national prominence as the dean of the financial press and someone covering the dean of the financial press covering the municipal market. He's my pick always for the top reporter in this area. My prediction is you're going to see his name a lot more as the municipal market gains in attention in 2013 and 2014, particularly after the election, because the issues are, the financial issues and the debt issues in this country are going to come to ground in the municipal budgets, and that's going to impact the municipal bond market. And Joe's somebody who understands the complexity of this market. It's not a simple market, and things are never quite as they seem because you really have to get into the details, and Joe's somebody who's a master of them. So I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation tonight. I've been receiving excellent recommendations from many of the subscribers for guests from the Solari Report. I love these recommendations. Please keep them coming. Don't be discouraged if it takes time. I generally, if I don't haven't known someone for a long time, if I haven't read their work and checked references, and particularly if they make recommendations, I try to use them personally. It's amazing these different things you'll see me try and use. I kind of use myself as the guinea pig. So, you know, you can make an excellent recommendation that I'm very interested in, and it can literally take months before I read their books and try their stuff myself. So don't be discouraged because, again, I get a lot of great ideas from you. I expect to get more. We're going to be lunching with subscribers in San Jose on the 14th of, not this Saturday, next Saturday. And it's going to be at a private home with a wonderful Australian subscriber who's a great friend and also happens to be an absolutely fantastic chef. So for those of you in the area, I hope to see you. Money and markets. We've been watching for months the largesse of the ECB and central banks in response to what's happening in Europe. And now we watch as the Fed comes to the end of what's called Operation Twist, which is a effort to change maturities on the yield curve and so help bring long-term interest rates down. Tremendous interest in what is the Fed going to do next. Of course, many people hoping for a QE3 because to the extent that that will buoy prices in the commodities and equity markets. Don Cox, one of my favorite commentators and an investment manager in the commodities area, is quoted in his latest commentary as saying, the financial heroin continues to flow. Again, since 2008, we've seen the Fed do QE1, QE2, now Operation Twist. If I'm right about what's happening in the FHA and other federal mortgage funds, I think the numbers are much higher. And again, if you look at charts correlating the equity and commodity prices with the Federal Reserve actions in purchasing mortgage assets and managing the yields lower, the correlation is significant. So the market is Fed watching like never before. Not this week, last week, there was an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal that sums up a lot of the issues because the Fed has now become the major portion of the Treasury market. Let me just read a report on the Wall Street Journal piece. The Federal Reserve is propping up the entire U.S. economy by buying 61% of the government debt issued by the Treasury Department, a trend that cannot last. Larry Goodman, a former Treasury official, writes in the Wall Street Journal opinion piece published last Wednesday. Last year, the Fed purchased a stunning 61% of the total net Treasury issuance, up from negligible amounts prior to the 2008 financial crisis, Goodman writes. Goodman also warns that the U.S. economy and markets are at risk for a sharp correction if conditions aren't normalized. This not only creates the false appearance of limitless demand for U.S. debt, but also blunts any sense of urgency to reduce supersized budget deficits. The U.S. government is growing increasingly more dependent on borrowing to finance itself, with net issuance of Treasury securities hitting 8.6% of gross domestic product on average per annum, more than double levels. And Goodman in the article goes on. One of the reasons the Fed buying such a high percentage of government debt is a concern is the extent to which it is propping up the rest of the economy in an unsustainable manner. If you look at household income on a county level, and corporate earnings on federal government flows, the dependency is enormous. What can look like private earnings for a corporation, if you look at what's coming from government purchases, from defense contracts, other federal contracts that can be quite extraordinary, and outsourcing of government functions to corporation continues to grow. My partner at C-Lane, Chuck Gibson, pointed out an excellent piece to me. He's great at digging out these great pieces. John Hussman at the Hussman Fund wrote a piece called A False Sense of Security. It's linked up on the blog. And it's really, it does an excellent job of describing the problem with this dependency on non-sustainable government financing of corporate earnings. The markets were watching the Fed this week, and so when the signal came out that Operation Twist wasn't going to be followed up with anything immediately, or so indicated the minutes and certainly the talk, you saw commodity and gold prices and silver prices falling. It looks like one of the reasons for a reluctant Fed action is tightness in the labor market, and that's very important because if you look at monetary inflation has not turned into the kind of hyperinflation that we see some people predicting, and one of the reasons is globalization has allowed tremendous deflation in the labor market. So we've offset monetary inflation with lower wages literally globally. Couple commentators pointing out that one of the things that's changing the Fed's economic perception is the real problem with not so much employment versus unemployment, but the inability to fill vacancies. Gavin Davis in the Financial Times writes as follows on his blog, the relationship between unemployment and vacancies is called the Beveridge curve. Since most of these variables measure labor market slack, they should be inversely related to each other in a fairly predictable manner. Higher unemployment should imply fewer vacancies and vice versa. However, in the current recession, unfilled vacancies have been stubbornly high, higher than they should be given the level of the unemployment rate. This suggests that companies may be struggling to find suitable workers to fill the available jobs in the economy, in which case the labor market is tighter than would be implied by the employment figures. This is a continuing mystery, where the jobs are going to come from and how that will match up with the skills of the people who need jobs and the extent to which in both Europe and North America, we're looking at an unprecedented structural gap sort of between the people who need jobs and the skills that are required. We have published a special Solari report on the Jobs Act and a bit of a defense on the Jobs Act, and I will post that up on the blog by Monday, and I recommend that to you because whether it turns out to be a big capital shift or not, it could have a very dramatic impact on the ease with which small business can raise equity. As I said before, needless to say, commodities and equity markets tumbled this week in response to the Fed's indication that there was no forthcoming formal plan to keep buying bonds and mortgages. Gold and silver dropped well through their moving averages, but have enjoyed support in the last 2 days. We'll talk a lot more about that next week when Chris Powell of GATA joins Franklin and me for the Precious Metals Market Report. It's going to be a very interesting one. The debates on how to handle too much debt go on and on in North America and around the globe. Some pieces on the blog are worth noting. We saw a federal district judge overturn Wisconsin's efforts to throw out collective bargaining rights and dues collecting authority for state employee unions. And that's a very interesting, I haven't studied the opinion, but a very interesting development in what has been happening in Wisconsin. There's another article on the on how well Iceland is doing in the face of their ability to sort of face the music and write off debt to manageable loads. Interesting. One of the most fascinating I found, again, up on the commentaries of the blog, Ireland faces popular revolt over new property tax. Get this. Ireland has new property taxes, they were due, recently, sometime this, the end of March. The government said less than half of the country's 1.6 million households have paid the charge. So can you imagine a 50% default rate on federal taxes in the United States? It's pretty, it's not all taxes, it's just that one charge. But it shows you the extent of the pushback on citizens taking the full bite of a lot of these workouts. Not unrelated to this question is the squabble going on sort of not behind the scenes, but in front of the scenes. God knows what's going on behind the scenes. In the president's comments on the Supreme Court's consideration of Obamacare, we have arguments being made that that Obamacare or provisions of it are not constitutional. And clearly, if you look at any projection of what federal health care expenditures are expected to become with or without Obamacare, you know that this is at the heart of the debt debate and the fact that the fiscal house of the United States federal and the federal government are simply not on a sustainable basis. Another article that was interesting to point out, the housing market has been in the doldrums. We know, thanks to the state AG settlement with the banks, that we have lots of foreclosures coming in the states that are court-controlled in terms of foreclosures. It's about half. Indications that more and more investors are looking to buy homes, an article in the Times on that trend. Again, it's linked at the blog. That I put it up there because I'm getting the same indications from lots of different clients and colleagues around the country that they're starting to see a little bit more action in the housing market, but a lot of it's coming from investors, given what's happening on yields in the fixed income market and money spilling over into bonds. It's not surprising to see it spill over into real estate. But it's worth watching because a very important indicator for the economy is going to be how we continue to slug through this backlog in the housing market. Our hero tonight is John Patrick Shanley. Talk about good things happening to another person who's just been on the Solari Report. For those of you who are in New York, I highly recommend his new play. He's changed the name, so it's no longer, I think it was Sleeping Demons when John was on the Solari Report. He's now calling it Storefront Church. And again, it's the third play in the trilogy that included Defiance and Doubt, but it's playing from May 16th to June 24th at the Atlantic Theater in New York, and it's fabulous. So if you're so inclined, check it out. The whole announcement is up on the blog. You can see it at the blog. Ask Catherine. I've had several subscribers wanting to know if I had seen the story on a gentleman called Andrew Wardis. He was a gentleman who lived in the suburbs in Atlanta. He started to raise chickens and, I guess, turkeys, got into a squabble with local officials that got way out of hand, ended up basically destroying his financial situation, and he ended up burning his house down and himself in it. The story is several links, and you can see all about it on the blog. I have seen the story. Obviously, it's and I went ahead and posted on the blog. Who knows what the truth is? I've seen many situations like this where you get a person getting into a squabble with a set of government officials and then things sort of turn bad and get out of hand. Who knows what the truth is here? I don't know what the truth is here, but it's certainly a terrible commentary on Roswell, Georgia, that this has happened. And, you know, and it's one of those things you look at and you just roll your eyes. I do think it's very, very important to understand that we're in a process, and debasement, currency debasement, is something that causes these kinds of things. We're in a process where more and more people are going to be under pressure. You're going to get all sorts of erratic behavior. And as the cash flows recede, you're going to get tensions between things like municipal officials and citizens, and you can get battles that get out of hand. And I know because I've certainly been part of one of them. And it's very, very important in this kind of environment to keep your cool and to not let your tempers get to the point where you burn your house down and yourself in it. There's always a, you know, there's always a pathway, so let's not go to violence or suicide. I did want to mention, because I think of it sort of, I call it the tuna can problem. When you go to the store, and this is sort of my example of debasement and how it hits us all. You go to the store to buy a can of tuna fish. It costs 10% more. The size of the can has shrunk 10%, so you're getting 10% less tuna, and then there are real concerns about the environmental pollution or impact of what it is you're buying. And so you multiply that increased cost and that increased risk hundreds of times a day as you go through your life, and you start to see the debasement, the wear and tear on your time and money and sense of well-being that debasement can cause. And that's why it's, I think it's unbelievably important in this day and age to find ways of diffusing the pressure. One of my favorite books is C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, and it's a series of letters written by the devil to his agent on Earth, explaining all the different ways he wants to mess up the human beings. And it's a very short book, very easy to read. And C.S. Lewis is a wonderful writer, but it's a remarkable sort of primer on helping you remember the basic principles of how you keep your cool when you're going through the gauntlet. So I recommend it to you. And with that, we're ready to talk with Joe Mysak. We're calling the interview "Insight on the Municipal Market," and Joe is certainly a person who has extraordinary insight on this market. He's made a career of helping his readers understand the municipal bond markets and all sides of it. He's got a wonderful book called "Handbook for Muni Bond Issuers." If you're a public official, handling your bond issuance and your finances is unbelievably important. And because this is a complex market, there are many things that have to go right to do it smoothly. If it goes wrong, it can significantly raise your cost of capitals or hurt the local finances. So it's very important, and I think the handbook is a wonderful book for you or government officials you know who could benefit from it. And he has a new book that's fantastic. It's The Encyclopedia of Municipal Bonds, a Reference Guide to Market Events, Structures, Dynamics, and Investment Knowledge. One of the things I find with my clients is they're very smart, they're very sensible, they understand a lot of finance. What they're missing is good definitions of words, so that when they go into a market that they don't understand, like municipal bonds, if they just have a great encyclopedia and can look up the words, they can navigate a lot by themselves. So if you need such a book, if you're investing in municipal bonds or dealing with them in any way, I recommend it to you because it's a very, very rich and complete resource book. And it's got a lot of very interesting stuff about hidden beneath those stories and sections. Joe began writing for the Bond Bar, which was, when I was on Wall Street, the paper covering the municipal markets, and then wrote for Grants Observer, starting his own municipal piece for Grants Observer, which was one of the finest subscriptions you could have in the fixed income market. Again, when I was both in Wall Street and Washington, and for many, many years I was a subscriber to Grants Observer. And then Joe, in 99, went to Bloomberg, where he serves as the editor for the Bloomberg Briefs in the Municipal Market. And he's so this is somebody who has a very rich insight and background in the municipal market. And with that, let me bring him in. Joe, are you with us?
I am, Catherine. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. This is, it's funny because I love talking about the municipal market, and I never get to talk to people who are real pros in the municipal market these days, so this is a real a real treat for me. So let me just give you a chance to bring us up. Tell us what you've been doing most recently.
Well, I generally keep baker's hours because I put out a daily report on the municipal market called Bloomberg Brief, the Municipal Market. That's about 4 or 6 pages, sometimes a little more. Comes out every day, goes out over the terminal, is also sent out to subscribers. And so that's what I do. I get in the office around 3:45 and put the publication together. We send it out every day at around 7 a.m.
Well, that is baker hours. That is baker hours. Okay, so give us a little overview. I think many of the people listening tonight are familiar with the municipal market, but just give us a little overview of the size and scope of the market.
Well, you know, the thing is with the municipal market and what I try to do in the encyclopedia, if there are 3 words that investors can take away with them, it's that generalization is meaningless.
Boy, that's the case.
Yeah, you have this, it's an enormous market. It is particular and specific to a remarkable degree. It requires study. It requires a little bit of analysis. And this is the kind of thing that for years, I think investors really didn't want to do. That's primarily because as MSRB statistics have shown us, the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board, is that most bonds go to bond heaven. They are sold, they're priced, and after about 30 days, they're no longer there.
There's no secondary market for a lot of the issues.
There is a secondary market, but most municipal bonds, after 30 days, go away. Investors
go away.
Put them away. Don't think about them. And that's why the market is not as liquid as people might, expect a market to be. So when things go wrong, when lots of people are selling, when lots of institutions are selling, things get a little gummy. So it's an enormous market, and you have, it's $3.7 trillion worth of municipal bonds out there. There are, as I always try to tell people, according to the latest census of governments, which is done every 5 years, almost 90,000 governmental entities in the United States. 90,000. So it's sort of amazing to me when you have Harrisburg or Jefferson County or Detroit or Stockton, reporters play connect the dots and say, well, here's a trend here. And I read stories like this and say, really, trend? 90,000 individual governments out there, you call this a trend? So, 90,000, maybe between 50 and 60,000 have actually sold bonds at one time or another. So it's this enormous thing, and it's very difficult to get a handle on.
Right. In some ways, it's sort of the opposite of the government, the treasury market. The treasury market, you have one credit and trillions of dollars. And in this one, you have trillions of dollars and just an enormous amount of different issuers. And it's very, I always thought of this market as quirky. It's very, very quirky.
Right. Yeah.
Right. One of the things I wanted to mention is that maybe if you could just talk a little bit about the difference between a general obligation and a revenue bond.
This is something that's been very much in the news.
Yeah.
For the longest time, the people would describe the market as having essentially 2 bond structures. One is a revenue bond, which is supported by, as you might think, revenues, such as water bills, something like that, toll fares. And the other is general obligation, where a municipality pledges its full faith and credit and its taxing power. And what's happened in the longest time, we all thought that general obligation bonds were sort of sacrosanct, that municipalities were bound to make payments on this kind of debt, that it was the safest possible bond you could get. And over the last, I really want to say, just months, we've come to realize that certain municipalities may opt not to pay their general obligation debt, and some municipalities, if they go into Chapter 9 bankruptcy, the general obligation bondholders are unsecured creditors. They're unsecured creditors in 22 states. 28 states say the general obligation bondholders are secured creditors.
So that means that ad valorem taxes aren't on the hook.
Right.
Right.
It's somewhat disconcerting to the market. I carried something in the brief today about Jefferson County, and Jefferson County says, and it's bonds, you know, these are general obligation bonds, and here's the variety of revenues that are behind them. And then it says, while this is true, none of these taxes are specially pledged to the repayment of the bonds, which most people would never take a look at something like that. Most people wouldn't fathom it. It just goes to show that if you're going to get involved in this market, you really have to read the documents, which is, you know, it's not that difficult a thing to do. Just get a hold of the official statement and take a look. Go through there, read a little bit. After a while, you know, you get to know what kind of boilerplate you could throw out and not pay attention to, and then fasten upon the, you know, security for the bonds, you know, exactly what it's being used for, et cetera, et cetera.
The one thing that frustrates me in the municipal market is I find it very hard to find the official statements. So if you want the official statement, unless you are part of an expensive service, you've got to start calling up the issuer, and it can be a real runaround to try and get it. Do you have any ideas on how we get the official statements?
Yeah, well, nowadays you could go on the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board's website, and they have a lot of the official statements online, and it's a remarkable resource.
Isn't that just for the biggest issuers, or they have it for the little guys too?
They have it for the little guys as well. So there's
okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, a remarkable amount of information is out there. There's people like to say, well, the municipal market's murky and there's no disclosure.
But there's a ton of disclosure.
There's a ton of disclosure. There's a ton of stuff out there if you take a look and try to find it first. But then, you know, really, the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board's website is an amazing resource, contains tons of material, lots of material event notices, all sorts of things that are very useful for investors.
I should just note for everybody listening who hasn't spent any time in this market, an official statement is the municipal bond equivalent of a prospectus. So what's called a prospectus in the equity markets, this is an official statement.
Okay,
I remember when I was in – what?
That other market, yeah.
That other market. There used to be a guy at New York State whose full-time job was just to do the official the economic section of the official statement. And, he was fabulous. And that was just the kind of investment that a lot of these issuers put into maintaining unbelievable quality. Go ahead.
I like that story. there's some, I guess, misapprehension that all the people on the government side are a bunch of feckless rubes and sort of don't know what they're doing. Maybe it's a kind of a Wall Street view, but you know, there are a lot of public servants out there who try very hard to you sweat the details and like you say, you know, here you just work on the economic section of this document. And, you know, there's lots of people like that in the municipal market, as you know.
Well, I often get asked the question, how do I learn about the economy in my county, in my state? And one of the things I try and do is I encourage people to go read the official statements, because generally they have incredible, just a wealth of resources about the local or the state economy. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, they're very, very useful for a lot of other reasons. And I will also say that, you know, generally the quality of state and local officials in this area is very, very high. And it's quite amazing if you look at the complexity of doing these kinds of financings, how few problems there have been over the last 20 years. And I think, to me, the biggest problem was you had a lot of very high-priced, high-paid people being paid a huge amount of money to talk them into doing really stupid things.
Oh, dear.
So, I know, you know, I don't, you know, I hate to bring this up because it's gotten so many press, but the, you know, there really are very few stories of crazy things going on. But when you get one of those stories, you just roll your eyes, because I've been reading your articles on Jefferson County, and I'll occasionally follow that, and you think, how could it ever gotten this bad?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you think about it, yeah. But, like you say, there's a very, you know, where, I mean, I guess if you wanted to generalize, yes, you have very smart, very well-paid bankers on the one hand, and their knowledge of what they're selling is enormous. And on the other, you have the local official who's trying to do his best or her best, and their knowledge of the municipal market may be very small, because maybe they don't come to market every 3 months, you know, like a big New York issuer. Maybe they come to New York, come to the market every year or a couple of years. Terrible things.
I had a very funny, when I was FHA commissioner, I had the security, it was the SIA, not the MSRB, but it was the Securities Association, wanted to meet with me, so finally I had them over to my house for lunch one weekend, and the chairman came for this one banker from a firm I will not mention that starts with, whose initials are GS, and the guy basically said something to me that was a complete lie. And I looked at him and I said, Hal, I can understand why you want to lie to a regulator to get what you want, but why would you lie to somebody who knows you're lying?
Right.
And the chairman of the SIA just went right, he just went under the table. He was so embarrassed. But you know, you see, and I can say this because I was one of the investment bankers, you see that kind of aggressive lobbying year after year after year, and it's part of the challenge of what the government officials have to deal with. Well, let's turn and talk about some of the big trends that, if you're a municipal official, that you're facing and how that's going to impact the bond market. I just wanted to talk through some, which I know you've written of. There was a report in Kiplinger I just wanted to read about the budget pressures that municipalities are going to be dealing with next year. It's from Kiplinger's last week. Let me just read a few things from it. Still awash in post-recession red ink and facing the prospect of fewer federal dollars to come as Washington reigns in budget, many states will raise taxes and fees to make up for shortfalls of $49 billion in 2013. Some 30 state budgets will be in the red next year, and legislatures' hands are tied. States can't run a deficit the way Uncle Sam can, and many have already made severe cuts and services are exhausted. There's stopgap measures, and goes on and on. Interestingly enough, he says one of the things blamed demographics. Next year alone, 350,000 more kids in public schools than in 2008, 1.7 million more in public colleges and universities, and 5.6 million more folks added to Medicaid rolls because of job losses and wage and benefit cuts, and it goes on. So clearly the pressure, you know, what Kiplinger's saying is the pressure is going to be on state and local budgets after the election.
Yeah, and, you know, here's where some people might say, well, you know, the municipalities are just going to throw in the towel, so to speak. They're just going to say, you know, the idea that, well, we have to choose between our constituents and paying debt service, so we're going to stop paying debt service, and we're going to, you know, try to just do our jobs every day, which of course you can't do because then you're cut off from the credit markets. You know, what
right.
what are issuers going to do? Well, they're going to do what they always do. They're going to, you know, do their jobs. There are
right.
very few public officials who want who desire to lose power. I mean, if you want to come down to the most raw angle, a city council member doesn't want to say, that's it, game over. Everybody
right.
is going to be fighting right to the last, you know, to the last trench. I mean, look what's happening in Detroit right now. They just voted to allow a sort of oversight board, which, you know, I guess sort of like a financial control board, but not quite,
uh-huh.
almost. But that's the kind of thing they do. I mean, you're not going. You very rarely have a municipality that just, you know, sort of gives it up. What are they going to do? They're going to make hard choices. They're going to make cuts.
Right. They're
going to
make hard choices. They're going to work their way
yeah.
through it.
Right.
And it's where the to me, it's where the rubber is going to meet the road on reengineering the economy.
I mean, some
really, yeah.
Yeah. Some, I mean, some people won't, and you know, some municipalities will get into further trouble. But then again, you know, there is that level of the state. The state comes in and some states, not all. Certainly it doesn't seem like Alabama is working very hard. But some states are going to come in and say, okay, you have to stop right now. Here, let's get things back in order here. Otherwise, this is a bad thing. You know, you're not.
I don't mean to brag, Joe, but I live in a town. Our cash reserves are more than 10 times our annual expenditures.
Very good.
Yeah, our city council meets once a month. And you know what they do at the city council meeting?
Mm-hmm.
They look at the bills and they write the checks because we don't have any staff.
All right. You know, that's okay. You know, on a very basic level, that's what they do. And
right.
that's what they're going to continue doing. And so, I don't know, I somehow don't see this big, you know, massive meltdown in the market. This is just, you know, they muddle along. You know, I guess what we've become accustomed to is this sort of insane hyperbole, and I really blame the internet a great deal for this, where everything is the end of the world. And you know,
right.
guess what? When it's Armageddon, you'll know it.
Right.
You know, what happens? Things tend to just muddle along, and you know, they just bump along, and people grind it out. That's how things work. There's no, you know, big fireball.
Well, here is one of the questions that I don't know the answer to, and I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say. Which is one of the things that municipalities are struggling with is the pension fund requirements. And I would love to know what you think is coming over the next 10 years in terms of their ability to continue to fund and support the pension funds.
Well, once again, if you look back at the year, I think it was 2000, almost all the pension funds were 100% funded. Which is amazing to think. You know, after reading so many stories in the press, you'd swear that municipalities and states have been shortchanging pension funds forever. But no, what really happened? They lost money in the stock market. And
right.
what's going to happen? They're going to make money back in the stock market and other investments that they've made. They're not going to get crushed by these pension obligations. There's also the obligations of the unfunded pension, you know, mainly health care benefits that they've handed out. They are making cuts and adjustments. They already have done a lot of that. I forget which association it is, it might be the retirement administrators, but, you know, they come out with a report saying, well, you know, 40 states have already made, you know, various adjustments, and this goes on every year. So I don't see this massive wave, this tsunami coming and, you know, wiping out all the pensioners. Yet there are, you know, bad spots and hot spots, if you will. But you know, guess what? Things go along, and there's going to be, you know, taxes raised, and there are going to be various reforms put in. So just like, how can I say it? Muddling along is probably the way that most municipalities and states are going to be handling their pensions. 10 years, people don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. So right. I can't even, you know, I just, as I say, you know, if you look back at 2000, 100% funded. And, you know, there's a problem with that, too, because once the politicians and your lawmakers see that a pension is 100% funded or more, they start playing games. And that, right. You know, and bad things happen then.
Right.
So I'm not,
right.
I'm not thrown completely by this. I know there's certain people who think that it's going to be this absolutely crushing burden and that it's the end of the world, but, you know, it's just that, no, that doesn't happen.
Well, I do think, I don't think we're going to see Armageddon whatsoever, but I do think that you're going to see municipalities right at the heart of this vise, because the federal government for now can just print paper, and that drives everybody's expenses up, including the municipalities. But they have to balance their budget, and they can't print paper. And that, you know, that means their incomes fall as the unemployment and household incomes have fallen. And so they get more dependent on the federal money, and they get squeezed just like every one of us is squeezed in our own household budget. And mm-hmm. and so they're in a position where they have to balance the budget, so they're going to make the choices. And
it's going to be very difficult. This is not an easy
yeah.
job. This isn't, you know, maybe if everyone doesn't go to Wall Street like they did for, I don't know, the last decade, maybe decade and a half. Maybe if
uh-huh.
you have lots of smart people who go into the public sector for a few years, maybe that'll be a big help. It's certainly going to be a very challenging job.
It wouldn't. One of the things I try and do is get all of my subscribers terribly, terribly interested in local elections. And it's always amazing to me in a year with a presidential election how much we pay attention to the presidential and we don't pay attention to the local, which is where a lot of the decisions, you know, get made. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a lot more people interested in serving in local government as a result of what's happening. And I think that could be very, very positive. I live in Tennessee, and the caliber and the quality of people who go into state government here is extraordinary, and it makes an enormous difference in the quality of the life.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've dealt with state and local government in many different, you know, just as a citizen or dealing in business, and it's amazing. Everywhere you go, you get somebody that you like and is highly competent and really knows their stuff, and it makes an enormous difference to the day-to-day life and the productivity of business. So, it wouldn't surprise me. What do you think are some of the other important trends, Joe?
I think that the market, if you look back at the last few years, is remarkably resilient. I mean, the municipalities are still selling bonds, and people are still buying bonds despite various really amazing things, where you had a few years ago the auction rate securities market basically go away. You know, it froze up, causing tremendous disruption. Then you had the municipal bond insurers, almost all of them downgraded, oh no, all of them downgraded eventually because of their involvement not in municipal securities but in mortgage-backed securities and other things, structured securities, things like that. You know, so just those two things were amazing. Then you also had this entire bid rigging scandal that has been infecting the market for, I don't know, you know, 10 years maybe. This is, you know, we've had this enormous investigation going on and rumors, and you know, that
this
broke.
This wasn't the yield burning. This was something else.
Well, this was like son of yield burning. You know, like yield burning never stopped, as an IRS official once said. You know,
okay.
Somewhat ruefully. So any of these things, you know, on their own would have been enormous, but you had them all take place in the last 3 years. And then you also have, you know, this year you have the business with Harrisburg and Stockton and Vallejo and Detroit, you know, and Providence and Central Falls. So you have, you know, all this going on. So you know, what do we see going forward? Probably more skepticism about Wall Street and about various
securities. Well, most of the purchases in the municipal market are institutional. So when retail buys, they buy through the funds. And I would assume that some of the protection is the people, you know, a lot of the scare headlines don't scare an institutional manager who's managing a big fund, and who knows why that doesn't affect them. Mm-hmm. Isn't that part of what is impacting this market?
Well, yeah, I mean, we sort of like, when we talk about the market, it's like I'm thinking about two things here. On the one hand, I'm thinking about the issuers being more skeptical when bankers come in and offer them, you know, various...
Well, that's good, Joe.
That's a good thing, right.
That's a good thing.
And on the other side, I see investors who aren't really shaken, and really in both individuals and institutions, yeah. You know, and then, you know, there are so many stories that you could tell about all different, you know, sectors and parts of the market, which is, you know, part of the, you know, one of the things I tried to get into the encyclopedia, some of the little, you know, stories.
You got a lot of very delicious nuggets into the encyclopedia. I thought that was good.
Well, you know, the inspiration for it was, I was on the phone with a publisher, and they asked me, do you want to update the handbook, you know, which, as you pointed out, was published in 1998, and it is aimed at issuers. It's aimed at, here's how to get your bond issue sold, here's how to access this market. And I said, well, I don't think so. It kind of hangs together still, although it was published in 1998. And then I had a review copy on my desk of a book by Edward Steers Jr. called The Lincoln Assassination Encyclopedia. And I said, how about Encyclopedia of Municipal Bonds?
It's a great idea.
Said, you know,
definitely
sold. Like, let's, you know, send us a pitch. That sounds good. Because he has, you know, his format was just small entries, some larger than others, and, you know, the listing of sources. And I thought, gee, there's so many stories in the market that haven't been told, because the books out there, by and large, have been written by professionals who want to sell you something. Whether you're an investor or whether you're an issuer, they want to sell their services. So they want to sell banking services or legal services. And there's also the sort of managed books, you know, those big, dense books full of, you know, maybe 30 or 40 different articles written by everyone, you know, bond lawyers, bankers, investors, issuers, you know, all about various aspects of the market, but without much of a sense of the history of what's gone before, and without much sense of the history of all the little things that have occurred. And then, you know, and by the way, the encyclopedia, this is what a horrible time to come out with any sort of book that tries to you know, say, okay, I mean, it's just a snapshot in time. You know, I mean, I look at it now and say, wow, I want to add this. So if everyone goes out and buys it, then we'll get to a second edition and I could, you know, update it like that. But the Lincoln Assassination
the reviews have been very positive.
Yeah, well, you know, I tried to take a different approach to a subject that's sort of topical right now after the whole 60 Minutes Meredith Whitney business.
I just have to stop you. You did a great job of refuting. You were very grounded, but you really communicated this is a far more complex and quirky thing, and you know, And you didn't say this person knows nothing about this market, but you did a very good job, I thought.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things, you know, Meredith Whitney was saying, and she's repeated, she said, I can't believe nobody is saying these things. I can't believe nobody, meaning, and I, you know, I take it as a journalist, I can't believe nobody's writing stories about this. So, I mean, as I take pains in the encyclopedia to show, well, lots of people have been writing stories about these things, and there's been lots of very good, you know, lots of good coverage. I mean, just because you haven't read it doesn't mean it hasn't been there, and the whole business about the pensions. I mean, it's important for people to know that, yes, in 2000, the pensions were fully funded. And, you know, what happened after that? Okay, well, you know, lots of different things. But it's not as though, or take, for example, you know, another thing with pensions. The investment returns. And I read the other day a story that said that the return assumptions were wildly optimistic. And, you know, in fact, no. I mean, the assumptions on investments were in the eights. And at the time, the investors looked back 25 years and said, well, we've made 9.3% over the last 25 years. 8% does not seem unreasonable or wildly optimistic. And, you know, of course, some people had 8.5, some people had 9. But this is, you know, there's lots of stuff. There's lots of stories, lots of information out there, just because some people hadn't read this stuff, like you have, obviously, doesn't mean it wasn't out there and that nobody was writing it. Or like, you know, nobody was saying that municipalities are experiencing a great deal of fiscal pain. Of course, people have been writing about it, both on the local level and on the national level.
Right, but I think when Whitney, I never looked at what the details of what Whitney, I don't know if she had a reporter or not, if it was just her interview, but I don't think Whitney understood the number of rabbits that can get pulled out of the hat in the process of muddling through.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
the whole business about kicking the can down the road.
Right, so municipalities have 1,000 things they can legitimately do to kick the can down the road, and, you know, and I think for 2013 and 2014, the squeeze is definitely going to be on. The big question in my mind that could swing it, you know, it's Tina Turner said, we can do this nice or rough.
I was wondering where you were going with that, Catherine.
Yeah, is the squeeze going to be nice or rough is the debasement issue, because I'm an investment advisor these days, and one of the reasons my clients have been doing less and less municipal bonds is they just, you know, it's dollar denominated and they can't afford to get debased. And so since 2003, it hasn't in most years been a good bet versus things, you know, that have more inflation protection. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, if that debasement continues in the dollar, municipal bonds are going to pay the price for that. And if they have to pay that price when they're also getting squeezed on the budgets, that's going to make it, you know, the swing between nice versus rough, if more and more investors say, look, you know, we just can't afford, we have to downsize our dollar-denominated investments, and they get caught in that squeeze, which is not really about municipalities. So that's one big question in my mind. The second big question is employment. You know, household incomes have been falling steadily. And if you come to, I live in a very, very poor county, and the number of households that are dependent on government checks, you know, food stamps, unemployment, disability, on and on and on, have been rising steadily. And at some point, what municipalities need are they need enough employment and rising incomes to generate the taxes they need to just maintain their overhead. And if they don't do that, they're going to have to significantly re-engineer, you know, who and what they are.
Yeah.
So, to me, there's a, you know, those two issues bring a wide spread. And one of the things I would love to see is much more creative conversation instead of, you know, just getting shocked with the latest, you know, four stories or the four issuers who've been very ill-behaved is, you know, how are we going to reinvent ourselves? How are we? I used to tell the story when I was FHA commissioner, and you would appreciate the story, Joe. My staff brought in a town where 72% of the mortgages were in default and owned by Freddie, Fannie, and FHA.
Oh, wow.
And I said to them, I know, that's the first thing I said is, wow. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, why don't you have the town buy the mortgages? And they said, because the town needs to reinvent itself. And they said, well, the town doesn't have any money. And I said, well, you know, I'm from Wall Street. You know, we didn't have any money. We created an entity and issued paper. So tell them to create a REIT or a trust or something, and we'll swap them paper for the mortgages. And they looked at me like I was nuts. But but that's what needed to happen. You know, there's no point in aggressively servicing, you know, 72% of the mortgages in a town. That town needed was to rebuild their economic base.
Yeah, boy, those. Well, okay, I'll write those stories in the future. Okay, there it is. You've inspired me.
Well, Joe, tell us before you go. Tell us where we can get the books, how we can get the books, and how we check you out on Bloomberg and stay current on your work.
Well, you know, everyone should go to Amazon and click in, and I think I was number 650,000. It's M-Y-S-A-K, that's the last name, and you can, you know, there it is, Encyclopedia of Municipal Bonds. And, you know, it's a funny thing, I had not noticed this on Amazon, but the discounts slide. The discounts change every day. Sometimes the discount's 19%, sometimes you have a discount of 37%.
Oh, my God, if they were an underwriter, they'd be in jail.
if, you know, one person buys the book. Your ranking changes, of course, but then, you know, then another discount will take place. And I think the ideal discount for Amazon is 37% or 32%, something like that. And I was amazed to see that it switched like that. So, you know, that's the easiest place to buy the encyclopedia because it is a sort of premium item at $95. It's really not in bookstores. Unfortunately, maybe we'll get to a paperback edition. And then on Bloomberg, you could go to Bloomberg, and if people want to click on the there's, you know, a little icon in there for the Bloomberg briefs, and there's a whole series of them, and they come out every day. And the inspiration there was that we had people say, you know, Bloomberg has so many stories and so much data on it. Can't you collect it for just my market and put it into a, you know, sort of a format that I could print it out and take a look? Pardon?
You're the filter.
Yeah, well, you know, you could do that, but some people just, you know, wanted, you know, they wanted two or three items or two or three things covered. So,
yeah, they want somebody like you telling them what's important.
We put together the municipal market brief. We have a hedge funds brief. We have a mergers brief. But the municipal market brief comes out daily. And that's also a premium product, although we had various offers out there for, it's between $500 and $600 a year. We actually had an offer out to members of the Government Finance Officers Association and had, you know, several of them take us up on it. And what the brief is, you know, as we were talking about Baker's Hours, it's a collection of, you know, a couple of stories from, you know, our wire, maybe a Q&A, we've done lots of those, other little items that we stuff in there, and some data. We have lots of data about yields and data about the most actively traded bonds from the MSRB and results of sale. It's like a little daily newspaper on municipal bonds.
Okay, I have two quick questions before you go. Can we, if I'm an investor and I want to do diligence on a bond I'm interested in buying, can I still trust the rating agencies?
Well, you're certainly going to find in the municipal market very much more detailed analysis, you know, more of it and more detailed work than you've seen in the past 10 years. And I always think that the rating companies did a pretty good job in munis. Maybe not the best. I never liked it when I remember calling up an analyst about Jefferson County and saying, how come you didn't mention that they have 17 different swaps? And he said, well, that's the sewer district. That's not the county.
Oh.
And my jaw dropped. And I was so angry. I wanted to write about that, but I said, I'm going to hold my tongue. I can't believe that he just said that. But I think nowadays, I think now there's so much more scrutiny. There's just such good analytical material coming out about the municipal market, both from the rating agencies and from, various firms. But it's amazing. I mean, really, I'm sure you'd be surprised at just the depth of analysis and really good, insightful stuff.
Another quick question. If I'm a government official or an interested citizen and I want to stay abreast of all the different innovations that municipal officials and municipalities are coming up with to kind of muddle through this mix, where do I go? How do I stay current on that? Where do I find the information?
It all depends where you live, but I would certainly begin with your local paper. If you have a good local paper, they're going to have a lot of – I mean, unfortunately, they used to send the rookie reporters to the city council meetings. I think that's changed a little bit. But it depends where you live and how good the paper is. Unfortunately, we've seen a certain – you use the word debasement. We've seen a debasement in journalism of there not being that many good local papers. But there are lots of them. I mean, in Pennsylvania, for example, there were several really good local papers that were covering the – disaster it was when that state legislature said it's okay for school districts to engage in interest rate swaps and other kinds of financial engineering. And, there were papers that covered it, right from the word go and did a fairly good job. So certainly I'd stay on top of it that way. Then, of course, you have the larger media, and you could, you kind of set up a Google filter. You could get the municipal market brief from Bloomberg News. There's a lot of different ways to get news, especially on the internet. God, there's such a ton of places that will bring you very good public finance news. I mean, that's what I do.
I'm just trying to get out of the collapse mix into the innovation mix. Anyway, you probably didn't hear this because I talked about it at the beginning, but I have a prediction. And that is that this market is going to start getting a lot more attention. You think it's gotten a lot of attention the last 2 years. A lot more attention in 2013 and 2014. And people are going to be seeing your name a lot more on the national news. So that's my prediction. So
make sure
after the election you get some real rest, Joe, because you're going to have a busy 2 years. That's my prediction.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day. Okay,
you,
ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. We're not doing Let's Go to the Movies because we did lots of that last week, a great special with John Rappaport. The transcript should be up on the blog by tomorrow. Already on the blog is the list of the movies we chose, and I recommend them all to you. Great ways of understanding the real deal. In closing, coming up next week, Precious Metals with Franklin Sanders. We have Chris Powell of GATA, one of the smartest commentators on the precious metals market. I know Chris is an editor of a paper in Connecticut and was my fellow board member and colleague at GATA for many, many years. I have great respect for him. The following week, we have Kickstarter coming to talk about crowdfunding with the new jobs bill. That's going to be a very interesting conversation. We have luncheon coming up, not this Saturday, but next Saturday and the following Saturday in San Jose, April 14th. If you're in the area, I hope you come out. And this is Easter. It's a big weekend for some of us. I'm going to be over with Franklin at church at the Great Vigil and then with a congregation that increasingly includes more and more subscribers on Sunday. So if you're celebrating Easter, I hope you have a wonderful Easter weekend. And until next week, Precious Metals with Franklin Sanders. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.